I'm Patrick Campion, Program Director for 89.1 WEMU, and joining me this afternoon is the Athletic Director for Eastern Michigan University, Scott Weatherby. Scott, actually, give me your full actual title here. I know a lot of people just refer you to as the AD. But what's your actual title at Eastern?
Yeah, it's Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics.
And you can fit all of that on one business
card. Yeah, I just say I'm the AD or the Director of Athletics.
Right, but in the grand scheme of things, Athletic Director is what people would associate with your responsibilities, your level here of in the hierarchy at Eastern. So let's talk about that for a moment. As far as Eastern Michigan is concerned, in the overall hierarchy, you answer to Dr. Smith. You are essentially in charge of every decision that has to do with the athletics department.
Yeah, that's correct. And being on his executive council with the other vice presidents, and that's become pretty common in our role now as athletic directors to have a seat at the table with the executive council.
Okay, so you are then responsible for being a part of decisions or being at least part of the conversation that may entail other things at the university as part of the council that advises the president on different facets of what's going on campus. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, that's correct.
You came from Mississippi State, and I know that your journey started on the other side of the state at Western Michigan, or in Kalamazoo, where you grew up. Kind of give me the 20 years, last 20 years or so, that from graduating to at Western to getting to Eastern.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity, Kathy Beauregard, who is the athletic director.
I'm going to correct myself. Yeah. You graduated from Ball State.
That's right. And Kathy Beauregard gave me an opportunity. Her husband was my football coach and actually wrestling as well in Kalamazoo. And so I called her back to her and was able to get an internship and be able to graduate from Ball State with that internship. Worked at Ball State as a graduate assistant and did my graduate work there, and then I went on to Fresno State for 3 years and then San Diego State for a year and met my wife during that time and got married, and then we decided to move back east and spent 10 years at East Carolina, and both my kids were born there in North Carolina, and then had the opportunity to go to Mississippi State and spent 4 years there and had a really good run, and then the opportunity to come back to Michigan and bring my family here. And my dad still lives in Kalamazoo and my sister, so it was an opportunity for me to get closer to them. And so we made the move, and it's been about 8 months now.
Now, I read an interview with you while you were at Mississippi State that it was kind of your first experience for feeling like what it is to be the guy who the buck stops with, standing on the sideline of a football game and watching an injured player laying on the ground and suddenly having that feeling like, well, the next few minutes are all going to come down on me. How we react to this is maybe his future. How do we notify his parents? What hospital does he go to? Is he okay? Was that a point where you felt like that you could do this, that you could take on this responsibility, and that you wanted to be in that sort of decision-making place?
Yeah, actually, it was because, I had coaches' wives looking at me. We had, we're communicating with the University of Kentucky's personnel, and then we're starting to think, how are we going to get this young man home because he's not going to fly back with the team? And that was a powerful moment for me, and it's one I'll never forget because you're realizing that there's nobody else to turn and look up to, that everybody else is looking at you. And so, and in that time, how do you react? Do you panic and run away? Do you step up and say, okay, you got to remain calm and let's get the facts and let's do the right thing. So that was really a moment where I felt like, I can do this, but it also you realize the severity of your job and the importance of it. And that people are looking for you for that leadership. And
by the way, how did it turn out for that student?
So he ended up just being, what we call a stinger. We were on the phone with his parents quite a bit, and it worked out that we actually had a donor that was going to leave the next morning on a private plane, that he was able to hop on that plane and get back to Mississippi. So everything worked out great, and certainly don't want to make light of the moment, but for me, it was just something I really remember my very first week kind of being in that interim role.
Were you inspired to apply for the job at Eastern, or were you recruited and asked to apply for the opportunity?
Yeah, so they did a search firm, Parker, I had met Daniel a few times, but not ever gone through a process with him. And he knew I was from Michigan, had Mid-American Conference background. He had actually reached out to me on, you know, just actually coming to Atlanta to meet other actual basketball coaches is just a get to know. And then through that discussions and getting to know me more than that, he said, you know, would you be interested in going back to Michigan? And so then that's kind of where it started. So I didn't really reach out to him. It was more he reached out to me, and just in those conversations, it was, oh, by the way, oh, I didn't realize you lived in Michigan or grew up there. And that's kind of where it started.
What were the things you really hung your hat on at Mississippi State? I mean, your proudest accomplishments down there.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we won in 2016 and 2017, the marketing teams of the year for, and it's not just our marketing department, it's our whole external team. So it's our video department, it's our communications department, our graphics and all those, which I oversaw all those. And the neat thing was, is every one of those employees, I said maybe outside of two, were ones that I hired in that time frame. And we built that together. And they're continuing to do great work. And when you hire good people and let them go do their job, that's one of the things that I'm most proud of, and more proud for them, because they get recognized and they have that on their resume. So that's one. And then, you know, just the whole fan experience and trying to take it up a notch there, and feeling like I made a dent within the athletic department, but even more so with my wife and kids in the community. I feel like we still talk to a lot of people in Starkville, and we still try to give back and do things with them there. We're rooting for Mississippi State in the finals for women's basketball, because they're going to be in Columbus, and my family would love to go see some of those people that we haven't seen in a while.
What was the campus environment like at Mississippi State in terms of student support for athletics, or administrative support for athletics, or even, you know, alumni community support? I mean, what was the, was it a community facing athletics department? Was it more for, you know, donor facing athletics department? Was it a student facing? I mean, everybody kind of has a primary focus. What was it down there? Was it kind of a mixture?
Yeah, it was a mixture at the, when I first got there, but it really started to come together, you know, after the fall of 13, and, you know, we started having conversations. We, as an external group in athletics, started to work with our public relations and our marketing on campus. We started to really work together, and we talked about what is the brand of Mississippi State. And through that, we actually decided to change our university marks into our athletic marks, since our athletic marks are going to be on the SEC network every day. They're going to be out on ESPN, and people are going to see that and identify, well, why don't we go ahead and make the whole university that way? And there was a lot of angst amongst, you know, faculty and staff on campus with that. If you looked at all of our Twitter pages that everybody had, some of them you wouldn't even know was a Mississippi State college, or, you know, within the one of the departments. And so we changed all that, so we were all uniform, and I think it went over really well. They've won some awards for how we transformed that. And I was a big part of that process, and our staff was included on all the different breakouts, and it worked really well. And so there's some really good synergy on campus. And by the time I left, I think if you went back and talked to the public relations person, Sid Salter, who's outstanding, and the president's office, they would say, because we worked so well together, it helped benefit the whole university and be able to do that. And so, you know, that's certainly kind of a blueprint for me to work on that. But we also had to go on campus. We had to talk to others and realize that we all have the same goals and aspirations for our university. And it certainly helped, you know, winning some as well.
Yes, and so you're being approached now, I mean, going back in time to last year, you're being approached about looking at the job at Eastern. What was your first reaction? I mean, I'm assuming you went and looked at news about Eastern and to mm-hmm. see that, you know, what did you find, and what was your kind of, and I'm sure you also, you know, you saw the HBO special and, mm-hmm. you know, you hear the national stories, you know, not just specifically related to Eastern, but the mm-hmm. state of Division I athletics and a mid-major conference on mm-hmm. the whole. You know, what was your initial take about the challenges you thought you'd face and the changes you thought you could make immediately?
Yeah, so when I looked at it, you know, obviously, you know, some of the excitement was, you know, where the programs were at, what coaches were here and in place. That's something that you certainly look at. And then I looked at what are some of the things that Eastern Michigan athletics needed, and the areas that I thought they needed were my strong suits. I thought fan experience and raising revenue and having relationships with campus, those, some of those negatives that were out there, those were the things that I thought I could spur positive and then use the other momentum that was already positive to continue that track. And so I didn't have to come in and, you know, fire a bunch of coaches or make a lot of changes. A lot of good things were here. I just needed to fix a few little things. I thought Heather did a great job of laying the foundation and getting the upward trajectory going over her 3 or 4 years. And so I was going to just build off that and then pump in behind, you know, whether it's revenue or fan experience or student athlete experience, trying to make that better. And so that's where I thought, hey, this could be a good fit. I can come in here. And again, you want to make a, you know, Coach Creighton and I talk about it a lot. We're going to lock arms and we want to make a difference here. And whether it's 10 or 20 years from now, somebody will come back and say, I remember the time when Scott was there, they had to make some difficult decisions, but look at where they took off and, you know, our attendance went up and people started to kind of rally together and help our program. And then look what it did for the university. And they were in a, you know, we're in a tailspin on student credit hours, but yet we were able to bottom out and turn this thing around and get, you know, get our retention going, get people to come to school here and take advantage of our athletic department.
I think that it's no secret that the university has been facing some significant financial issues, not just recently, but I know it's come to the fore, but especially related to athletics. This has been a conversation both on and off campus for a number of years here. As of a couple of years ago, the primary revenue sports of football, women's and men's basketball, were being subsidized to the rate of about $7 million a year by the university. Attendance for football before the year when they went to the Bahamas Bowl in 2015 was the lowest of any Division I football program in the country. You know, you're looking at those, and I'm assuming you're seeing those as significant challenges for growth. So how do you come to a university that even in the face of, you know, laying some groundwork for a better future, has substantial issues that would stand in the way of even getting to a point where you can talk about growth and then planning for growth afterwards? I mean, how do you tackle starting from what some might describe as being in a pretty big hole?
Yeah, and you know, when you're having those conversations, when you're going through the search process and looking at what you're walking into. You know, what I was looking at from an athletic budget was that we were taking less and less from campus. Our revenues were continuing to go up and that I could help enhance that as we go. And we did. I mean, this year will be the best year we've ever had financially as an athletic department on the revenue side. But I don't think I had a real pulse of what campus was going through in the fact that, you know, at one time, you know, I'm learning now that we were well over 500,000 credit hours and that we've dipped below that. And then that number keeps to continuing to decline. And we're looking at, you know, budgeting a, you know, mid 400,000 and that I didn't see. I didn't know that was going to happen. And then in turn, what campus is giving to athletics to help support our program, that money would be eliminated this quickly and I wouldn't have the opportunity to try to raise more revenue. And so that part of it, you know, I wish I would have probably maybe done a little more research or tried to find out. I don't feel like it was hidden from me during the process at all, because they were very open about there are some struggles. I just don't think I knew the depth of how quickly it would actually come.
You talked about donors a little bit. Athletics as a department has struggled with getting a donor base typical of a Division I FBS type school, especially in terms of its place in the overall income for the department. You've been here only 8 months, but you know, what do you see as the place that'll play over the next year, 5 years, 10 years in the department, and how do you grow it into the income source it needs to be?
Yeah, so you know, I went back and I did a little history of, you know, where, how has our fundraising been in athletics, and you know, we have records I think back to 82. So if you go from 82 to 2013. It was like $10 million in 30 years, you know, and we've done about $5 million over the last 4 years or so, and we're continuing to try to ratchet that up. And how do you do that? you build relationships with people, and then you get them to buy into, obviously, the programs. And then you also say, how can you help us to be a stronger program? How do we make it so we don't have days like we had earlier this week? I mean, if we have people step up on the front end, and when we're asking for money to try to help our programs, that they do that. And like you said, before I got here, there's been budget issues. This has not been new. You know, coaches have been walking around on eggshells for the last 2 or 3 years, knowing that what has happened could have happened even earlier, and probably should have happened earlier, but it didn't. And why haven't we had you know, gone after and try to get more of that raised up so we didn't have to do this. And so, but we're going to get leaner, meaner now, and we're going to really hone in on, you know, football is very important. Basketball, buying season tickets helps all of our programs. That's a revenue source. That is less money we have to borrow from the university, or you get from the university in subsidies, as long as we can grow our different revenue buckets. And there's not a lot of them. You know, you've got sponsorships, there's tickets, there's fundraising. I mean, there's not a lot of them out there. So we've got to really hone in and focus on those.
Fundraising, just not in athletics, on this university as a whole, has been a challenge for a mm-hmm. lot of different departments here. Mm-hmm. You know, and in your world, the emotional attachment piece, I think, is bigger than and maybe some of the other departments here mm-hmm. on campus. So how do you overcome, you know, the three major barriers that this university's always had to emotional-based fundraising, which is disenfranchisement among multiple generations that consider themselves Hurons and don't associate themselves with the university since the change there, mm-hmm. A 20 to 30-year tradition here in the university of being largely a commuter and non-traditional student campus, which does not embed them into the world of athletics sufficiently so that down the road they may want to come back and support it, mm-hmm. and not having a tradition of success to build off of. I mean, right. we've been Division I for better than 53 years, and you can count on one hand the number of championships, the revenue sports, the non-revenue sure. sports, some of them incredibly successful.
Right.
But the primary ones that I'm assuming you would feel need to generate revenue, football, men's and women's basketball, mm-hmm. don't have a long tradition of success built over time, or success that lasted for more than a year or two before it kind of petered out.
Yeah, and I would say you're correct on, you know, overall university fundraising. And I think obviously Bill Shepherd is coming up on his 1 year as well, and him and I have talked a lot about just the lack of kind of foresight before on how to go out and tackle and fundraise and try to ask people. I mean, I get that a lot in my first 8 months is, well, nobody's ever asked. Nobody's ever really reached out. And so we're trying to break down those barriers. And then what I have to sell is, you know, look at our graduation rates and look at our what kind of students we're putting out. And then also sell the fact that when I can show different universities that we're competing against, when somebody has actually gone out and raised money and built the buildings or gave them the necessary resources, that they were capable of winning and making runs that can help the university. When Western Michigan can run the table and go 12-0 and take advantage of that, that's because they had people behind them giving them the resources to allow them to do that. And so you need to have that. I don't think there's, you know, I made a comment about UMBC and how much value that had in winning one basketball game, but they just built an event center. Somebody put an investment in to have it so they have a great home that they actually have been recruiting to the last 2 or 3 years, knowing it was coming, that helped them get to where they were better and ready to go to be able to make a run. So that those types of things are part of your sales pitch. I mean, because somebody's not just going to hand you $1 million because we're friends. I mean, we've got to show a vision of where our program is going, and you know, obviously helping and what kind of student athletes and students we are putting out in building champions for life.
How many previous commitments, and this is just I think a problem in general with fundraising, not specific to this university, is you get commitments and then staffing changes happen, staffing transitions happen. What I'm getting at is how many of the commitments that were made to, for example, Heather Lyken in mm-hmm. her previous tenure here as the athletic director, are you seeing still willing to commit with the new? And specifically among them, the largest donation, which was the $6 million anonymous mm-hmm. pledge to the university to kind of jumpstart the championship building program.
Yeah.
I mean, are you in touch with all those people and they're all still on board and they're all still excited about the future of Eastern Athletics?
Yeah, I would say that I've had great conversations with just about all of them. You know, we've had a few that were certainly disappointed that Heather, you know, chose to leave and kind of the timing of it. And then
how happy are they with you being the choice for athletic director?
Well, that would be a question for them. You know, I feel like I'm very transparent. I've had, you know, we have an advisory board that we've had, our championship advisory board. We've added four new members since I got here. And I think the response has been good. And, you know, I try to make it so that we can develop relationships. They understand, you know, what our primary focus is in helping our student athletes and trying to, you know, build championships. And so I think it's been good, but they may turn around and say, this guy's a bozo and look what he's doing. But I feel like when we're out, I mean, I can usually have a sense of, you know, if people are okay. And, you know, the only person on my advisory board I haven't met yet is TJ Lang. And after today, I'm actually meeting him today. So, I mean, I feel good about, everybody. You know, one of the notices that I have from when in the conversations we have is sustainability. I mean, that's something that, you know, Greg Derrick's here and then he leaves and then Heather's here and he leaves. And then how long is Scott going to be here? And, but I would say to the flip side of that is the reason people aren't staying is sometimes you're not getting the support you need. So if you can help support me to build this thing up, I'll stick around and see this through. But if I'm fighting and fighting and fighting and nobody's here to kind of help make this a better place, that makes it really challenging to want to, you know, dig in and really go for it. So
were you the choice of the coaches here? I mean, were they happy with the decision to bring you in as athletic director?
I think so. I mean, I think I've had a lot of really good support, and it may be better for, you know, some of my staff members that are here to answer that as opposed to me. But I feel like I've had one-on-ones with all of our coaches. I come around to all their practices. We try to be very open with them on where we're at with things. And so I feel like it's gone very, very well, and that people enjoy coming to work every day. And, you know, hey, every day isn't a great day, but, you know, we're certainly going to work hard. And they know that I'm in the trenches with them. I'm there. I'm accessible. I try to get to as many events as I can. My wife gets frustrated. My family does. But they know how important it is to, you know, that's how you develop the relationships and realize that you're a part of this.
A couple months ago, you met with the Faculty Senate here just to mm-hmm. get in front of them, I'm assuming, and just to talk about, you know, how athletics and academics can work together mm-hmm. better and answer specific questions. Mm-hmm. In that meeting, you mentioned that as part of this plan to build the new athletics training and sports medicine facility mm-hmm. on the athletic side of campus, that you had to present a business plan to mm-hmm. the president and mm-hmm. the Board of Regents. Mm-hmm. What was the overall goal with that business plan? I mean, I guess long term, I would assume you're not trying to get the Department of Revenue neutral, because there's only a handful of schools in the country that can really yeah. sustain that level right. of, you know, income versus output. So what is the business goal mm-hmm. short and long term for the department? And, you know, how did that presentation make the university comfortable enough with the department to start funding, you know, $20 million worth of a project?
Right. And they, so when talking with, you know, the board and with the president, you know, in trying to do phase one of, you know, multiple phases and looking at, you know, what is this building going to cost, and doing that, we were, you know, the $18 to $20 million range to kind of get this kicked off. And so when we were talking through it, I said, well, what do I need to go out? What do I need to bring to the table as an athletic department? And then what would the university be willing to help? Just like they're, you know, going to fund Strong Hall or SIL or anything else, you know, others, they're not fundraising. There's, you know, we at least have an arm that's going to go and help fundraise that. So my goal was to get to $12 million. is what they asked me to go and fundraise, and so and figure out ways to do that. So
a clarification, is that including the commitments that have already been made?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, correct. You know, so with that, you know, you look at, you know, can we go get banking? Can we go get healthcare? Can we go get other sponsorships? You know, what different areas? So we had to kind of lay out a plan, and then who we've been having conversation with, and then obviously individual donors as well. And I feel like we're set up very strong to kind of, my hope is within, by a year from now, we will have all that, and we're going to be in a good place for that. And
well, you said $12 million. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously half of that is from one commitment. Is that a sound plan to base 50% of your fundraising on one commitment that wasn't made during your time here?
Well, yeah, you know, I
or
think
is it risky.
Well, I mean, some people could look at it as risky, but I feel comfortable that we're going to get to our number and beyond. I mean, that's just for that part. I've got two or three other projects I want to get going on as well. So this is. But again, you're right. I just said, hey, after 30 years, we only raised $11 million, and so now, you know, in a window of 2 years or so, I've got to get this $12 million and beyond. So I realize the challenge that's there. But there are people here that are willing to help and that are willing to step up. But yes, do we hang our hat on one big donation here and then another big one? Yes. I mean, that's the Boone Pickens at Oklahoma State keeps. You know, do you want to keep going to the same well? No, you want multiple people to come and help step up and make the commitment. But, you know, you got to figure out who they are and cultivate the relationship and then show the vision of what and how that actually affects. And then, you know, again, a couple of the ones that I know have capability, they want to see sustainability within EMU and athletics. It's not just athletics. It's the whole university and making sure we're heading in the right direction.
So what is the overall goal for the department, that the subsidy level from the university? And just by that, I mean the general fund allocation that has mm-hmm. to come to athletics to yeah. meet the needs, including scholarships for athletes, mm-hmm. The difference between the revenue you can generate. What is the ultimate, short term, what's the goal? You mentioned a couple of years here. What's the goal over a couple of years? What's the goal over 5 years?
Yeah, and I would say the... You know, I'd have to go back and look maybe 3 or 4 years ago what that percentage was. When we look at our operating budget of our salaries and our SS&M as well, you know, that part, the goal this year was to be 65% campus, 35% from athletics, which is the best it's ever been. I think it's probably going to end up being more 37-38% from us. So we're even more to the good in that regard. So I'd like to see that percentage get bigger for our part to give less to come back. And there's a lot of things that go into that, whether it's fundraising or football guarantee games and gate receipts and then sponsorship. So those are the different buckets that we'll start to ratchet up. And, you know, Andy's here. We sit and do goals on where our new ticket revenue goal is going to be for next year. What's our fundraising goal going to be? And that's a fundraising goal for annual, but there's also a fundraising goal for capital. Those are two different things. So I would say, you know, my goal would be in a 5-year span is to try to get closer to 50%, you know, knock off a couple percentage points every year and make it so that we're less and less relying on campus. I don't want to rely on campus. I want to be self-funding. But you're right. The reality is there's like 10 schools in the country. Mississippi State was finally just getting to where we didn't have to use student fees and student money. And that's in the SEC where we got a $41 million check from a conference. So, you know, I've seen that side of it, but I also know that everywhere else there is a balance there. But my goal would be to not, you know, take less and less, and then be an advocate for campus to help them get better students and be able to get better faculty and allow us to get more students to come here.
You've mentioned a couple of times, and specifically the press for conference you did this week, you brought it up again, that really it starts with the notion that the president and the Board of Regents have a mandate, which is that they pass along to you, which you've said you agreed with, which mm-hmm. is that we're going to remain in the MAC as a school, that Eastern Michigan is going to remain in the MAC, or going to remain Division I, that is not a place where discussion is happening, that is the long-term goal, that we continue to remain, that we continue, mm-hmm. I'm guessing, to be competitive there.
Yep.
How do you succeed in something that no one has been able to do for 53 years here at Eastern?
Well, you know, I think, again, you continue to knock down doors, and I can't come in and take a giant leap. And so I think my staff probably gets tired of hearing me. I say we got to take baby steps. We got to have little wins along the way. And so whether that's, you know, increasing our football attendance, which went up 7%, and I look at actuals. You know, I want to know how many butts are in the seats. I'm not talking about fudge numbers of any, you know, tickets out or whatever. I want to know who's coming to our game, how many people are there, you know, and we just had, you know, a high for football. Basketball was the best we've had in 8 or 9 years since I think the Rob's first year, and women's basketball just had an all-time high. So those are little things. So now next year we're going to reset those, and then, you know, wherever that percentage is on a ticket revenue, we're going to, you know, increase that as well. So those are the things.
Right. I guess what I'm getting at, though, is that, you know, that the type of investment that's necessary to build a winning program, and winning breeds further monies down the road from more engaged funding sources. I mean, I'm sure you probably have a number in mind, or a number that you've developed, that football would need to spend, basketball would need to spend, to get us to a place where year after year we're competitive in the MAC on all those revenue sports. With the university pulling away general fund allocations and only minor incremental revenue increases coming through things like ticket sales, how do you fund that growth?
Yeah, I don't know how best to answer. I mean, that we continue to chip away at fundraising dollars, and there does have to be a focus on football and basketball because those are the revenue generators. If those go away or you don't have those, I don't have other sources of income to be able to go out. And yes, can you fundraise for your rowing program and those? I mean, there's not a revenue generator there when you have those, you know, 18 other sports that are not revenue generation. So, again, that's where you build the relationships, you fight like heck, you roll up your sleeves, and you put together goals for that.
One last question, and actually, we could have a chat for a couple more hours.
Yeah, absolutely.
One last question, which was, and this is really specific, the basketball game that was played here on campus at Convocation Center, the first round of the CIT, what was the audience or the intended audience for that game? I mean, who was that game played for?
It was played for our student athletes. That's why. Okay. That's why we're here.
But how much did that playing a game for the student athletes cost this university?
It didn't cost them a penny.
So who paid to open the Convocation Center and for Coach Murphy's bonuses and for the entry fees in the tournament? I mean, was it all funded by outside entities?
Yeah, so we used our donors that we talked to, and we talked to Rob, and Rob went out and helped us fundraise that. And so, you know, what we had to give to the CIT to host was covered through that. All the money that came through ticket receipts, gate receipts, was about $4,500 we got to keep. That helped paid for the building and open the doors. And, you know, what number they have out there publicly is not what we paid. Just to be transparent, we said we would not really talk about that because they have a tournament to run. But they were very fair to us, so it wasn't a significant amount. And
just out of curiosity, did a donor specifically say, here's – I'm going to use the number hypothetically of $10,000. Mm-hmm. Here's hypothetically $10,000 for you to enter this tournament. Or was this paid for out of donor funds that may have been just unrestricted funds that could have been used for other things?
Well, it was, you know, we went around and it wasn't just one person. So, you know, Rob and I, we talked to a few people to get it. Because, again, that's what, you know, the president was very factual with me or upfront and said, you know, we can't spend money on a basketball game. You know, look what we're going through. I'm the very first person to recognize that. And so, yeah, so we went and got a couple of people. It wasn't just one to help buy in. So we could give these. And look, we were going to send them on the road. It didn't cost us any money to go on the road. The CIT came back to us and said, hey, we would like for you to host. We'll take care of you with a really good deal if you can find the money for it. We went and found the money for it. We paid that, and then we got to keep the gate receipts for that, and that'll go into our, you know, basketball revenue for this year. And you know, that gave those student athletes, they got to stay on campus that whole week, go to class, they got to have the experience of paying in postseason. hey, we had one senior. I thought it would be good for our program to help set them up for next year. I think you've seen what, you know, Loyola Chicago just is into the Final Eight. You know, they paid a lot more. They spent, you know, 3 years ago to be in this $240,000 to, but this is what they believe helped them by going through that process. So,
well, you obviously from their background in media relations and external relations understand the value of PR.
Mm-hmm.
Did you not anticipate that in a time where massive budget cuts are being announced across the university, that the news of an additional expense, whether being funded by donors or not, would be received fairly negatively on the campus?
Yeah, and the president and I talked about that, and I said, look, as long as we're not taking from our general fund and spending university dollars on this, I feel comfortable to allow them to have this experience and to have the opportunity to play in the postseason. And
why not say that in advance of the game? Why not, you know, alleviate concerns that could pop up across campus? Why not issue a press release saying, we're doing this game, none of the money came from the university, we stand in solidarity with the campus mm-hmm. community right now that is losing good people that have worked here for mm-hmm. 10 or more or 20 or 30 years. We understand the value of those dollars and want you to be assured that there's no money coming out of anything that could be spent on, you know, offsetting the funding deficit.
Yeah, and I will say that, one, hindsight certainly would have kind of put that out there. I didn't realize that, I guess I just didn't see that it was going to be that dramatic of an impact that people would question it that much. So, you know, and I missed.
Well, welcome to Easter.
I totally missed. Yes. You're right. I mean, I've misgauged on a lot of things, but, you know, and that's something that I'll learn from. But also I had the conversation with Rob that, look, we're not in, you know, it's an NIT, NCAA, or bust type thing, and we're not going to spend money. It was more about, you know, we feel that we have got a lot of good guys coming back. They got a few more weeks. They got to taste a little bit of the postseason. Hopefully we can make that NCAA run next year so that, you know, we can have those moments that help Eastern Michigan, and we haven't been in a while. And
I guess the last thing here, fundamentally, you know, let's talk about that. The basketball team makes it to the NCAA next year. They win the MAC. They get the automatic bid. They're mm-hmm. in the NCAAs. They play a game. You know, obviously there's media revenue that comes mm-hmm. to the whole conference that we get a piece of as a school at Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
What is the benefit to the university? You know, is it just an intrinsic value thing? Is it a prestige thing? I mean, what do you, imagining the Board of Regents and the president have a similar view of this, of the benefit mm-hmm. of making it to that level?
Yep, absolutely. So to me, you always have to have a strategic plan ready to go. You have to be able to say, okay, what are our big talking points that are happening on our university that we can sell while we have that whole, we have a week leading up? What are the things that we're out there engaging people about Eastern Michigan? If this is the first time they've heard about us or actually went onto our website, you can see where UMBC, their website crashed because people went to their website. Their Twitter handle went up, you know. But we have to have all that prepared to tell about whether it's our forensic debate team or it's the number one student center. We need to talk about those things, so that helps. And then what happens is, and this is, they have a pretty good study that somebody had actually sent me right after this about how much applications went up, and it helped enrollment and helping those, because there's a sense of pride to that, and people are excited to be a part of that, and people can, you know, students can rally around that and say, you know, that's my school, and wear their colors, and so it helps you with sales with apparel and getting your name out there and having the opportunity to show what is the perception of Eastern when that happens. So we have to show them what we are and who we are in that short time, because there's not a guarantee we're going to win. And if we win, we got to capitalize even more, because then you got about a 48-hour window to show who you are. And those are the things that I've talked to faculty senate and talk to those on campus to say, give me our top 10 moments, or give me these things that we can share at football games and on ESPN and CBS College Sports. And we have a platform to sell our program and to sell our university. And just the branding alone is a really big thing to just get you, whether it's the Block E out there or Eastern Michigan or True EMU, whatever that is, we need to make sure we're you know, laser focused for just those 48, 72 hours to help our school get students to come here and have pride in it.
And if you don't meet your goals, I mean, you don't get to that place, you've set a couple of years, you know, you're trying in about 5 years to get to a more of a 50-50 revenue split, mm-hmm. or the revenue source split with the university, do you make more cuts like you just had to make?
Well, I would hope not, but, you know, I can't forecast where we're going to be. I told the president my goal is to help get our student credit hours up and to help retention. And so that's where the help, that's where I feel like athletics can help do that. And by making it a sense of pride amongst the students, get them active and involved. There's proof that if they get engaged and they're doing recreational sports or coming out to sporting events, that they are going to stick around in school and have some pride. So I'm going to focus on those things. I think we need to focus on the core group of students that are full-time students here and try to grow that base, and then hopefully I can infiltrate those freshmen and sophomores to get them to come and be a part of our events, all of our events, and that they're engaged, and then that'll increase our enrollment. That's where I can help the university just as much as fundraising and ticket sales and making that a 50-50 type of split. Even more so if I can get us from 450,000 credit hours back up to 500,000 and we're breathing life into the to Eastern again. That's the ultimate goal.
I think that's all I have for you, and I'm gracious for your extra time here. You know, you had a half hour, so we went a little over here, but appreciate it, and looking forward to conversing in the future.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Scott. All right.